Chapter 15 Continued. Harry was sitting with Ron and Hermione, removed from the centre of things, trying not to think about the next day, because every time he did, he had the horrible sensation that something very large was fighting to get out of his stomach. "You're going to be fine," Hermione told him, though she looked positively terrified.
"You've got a firebolt," said Ron.
"Yeah," said Harry, his stomach writhing. It came as a relief when Wood suddenly stood up and yelled, "Cheam, bed!" Harry slept badly. First, he dreamed that he had overslept and that Wood was yelling, "Where were you? We had to use Neville instead!" Then he dreamed that Malfoy and the rest of the Slytherin team arrived for the match riding dragons. He was flying at breakneck speed, trying to avoid a spurt of flames from Malfoy's steed's mouth, when he realized he had forgotten his firebolt. He fell through the air and woke with a start. It was a few seconds before Harry remembered that the match hadn't taken place yet, that he was safe in bed, and that the Slytherin team definitely wouldn't be allowed to play on dragons. He was feeling very thirsty. As quietly as he could, he got out of his four-poster and went to pour himself some water from the silver jug beneath the window. The grounds were still and quiet. No breath of wind disturbed the treetops in the Forbidden Forest. The whomping willow was motionless and innocent-looking. It looked as though conditions for the match would be perfect. Harry set down his goblet and was about to turn back to his bed when something caught his eye. An animal of some kind was prowling across the silvery lawn. Harry dashed to his bedside table, snatched up his glasses and put them on, then hurried back to the window. It couldn't be the Grimm. Not now. Not right before the match. He peered out at the grounds again, and after a minute's frantic searching, spotted it. It was skirting the edge of the forest now. It wasn't the Grimm at all. It was a cat. Harry clutched the window ledge in relief as he recognized the bottle-brush tail. It was only Crookshanks. Or was it only Crookshanks? Harry squinted, pressing his nose flat against the glass. Crookshanks seemed to have come to a halt. Harry was sure he could see something else moving in the shadow of the trees, too. And next moment it had emerged. A gigantic, shaggy black dog moving stealthily across the lawn, Crookshanks trotting at its side. Harry stared. What did this mean? If Crookshanks could see the dog as well, how could it be an omen of Harry's death?
"Ron!" Harry hissed. "Ron, wake up!"
"Huh?"
"I need you to tell me if you can see something."
"It's all dark, Harry," Ron muttered thickly. "What are you on about?"
"Down here!"
Harry looked quickly back out of the window. Crookshanks and the dog had vanished. Harry climbed onto the windowsill to look right down into the shadows of the castle, but they weren't there. Where had they gone? A loud snore told him Ron had fallen asleep again. Harry and the rest of the Gryffindor team entered the Great Hall next day to enormous applause. Harry couldn't help grinning broadly as he saw that both the Ravenclaw and Hufflepuff tables were clapping them too. The Slytherin table hissed loudly as they passed. Harry noticed that Malfoy looked even paler than usual. Wood spent the whole of breakfast urging his team to eat, while touching nothing himself. Then he hurried them off to the pitch before anyone else had finished, so they could get an idea of the conditions. As they left the Great Hall, everyone applauded again.
"Good luck, Harry!"
called Cho Chang. Harry felt himself blushing.
"Okay, no wind to speak of. Sun's a bit bright. That could impair your vision. Watch out for it. Ground's fairly hard. Good. That'll give us a fast kick-off."
Wood paced the pitch, staring around with the team behind him. Finally, they saw the front doors of the castle open in the distance and the rest of the school spill onto the lawn.
"Changing rooms," said Wood tersely.
None of them spoke as they changed into their scarlet robes. Harry wondered if they were feeling like he was, as though he'd eaten something extremely wriggly for breakfast. In what seemed like no time at all, Wood was saying,
"Okay, It's time. Let's go.
They walked out onto the pitch to a tidal wave of noise. Three-quarters of the crowd were wearing scarlet rosettes, waving scarlet flags with the Gryffindor lion upon them, or brandishing banners with slogans such as "Go, Gryffindor!" and "Lions for the Cup!" Behind the Slytherin goalposts, however, 200 people were wearing green. The silver serpent of Slytherin glittered on their flags, and Professor Snape sat in the very front row, wearing green like everyone else, and a very grim smile.
"And here are the Gryffindors!" yelled Lee Jordan, who was acting as commentator as usual. "Potter, Bell, Johnson, Spinett, Weasley, Weasley and Wood. Widely acknowledged as the best side Hogwarts has seen in a good few years."
Lee's comments were drowned by a tide of boos from the Slytherin end.
"And here comes the Slytherin team, led by Captain Flint. He's made some changes in the lineup and seems to be going for size rather than skill."
More boos from the Slytherin crowd. Harry, however, thought Lee had a point. Malfoy was easily the smallest person on the Slytherin team. The rest of them were enormous.
"Captains, shake hands," said Madam Hooch.
Flint and Wood approached each other and grasped each other's hands very tightly. It looked as though each was trying to break the other's fingers.
"Mount your brooms," said Madam Hooch. "Three, two, one."
The sound of her whistle was lost in the roar from the crowd as 14 brooms rose into the air. Harry felt his hair fly back off his forehead. His nerves left him in the thrill of the flight. He glanced around, saw Malfoy on his tail, and sped off in search of the snitch.
"And it's Gryffindor in possession. Alicia Spinett of Gryffindor with the quaffle, heading straight for the Slytherin goalpost. Looking good, Alicia. Ah, no! Quaffle intercepted by Warrington. Warrington of Slytherin tearing up the pitch. Wham! Nice bludger work there by George Weasley. Warrington drops the quaffle. It's caught by Johnson. Gryffindor back in possession. Come on, Angelina! Nice swerve round Montague. Duck, Angelina, that's a bludger! She scores! 10-0 to Gryffindor!"
Angelina punched the air as she soared round the end of the pitch. The sea of scarlet below was screaming its delight.
Ouch!
Angelina was nearly thrown from her broom as Marcus Flint went smashing into her.
Sorry, said Flint as the crowd below booed. Sorry, didn't see her.
Next moment, Fred Weasley had chucked his beater's club at the back of Flint's head. Flint's nose smashed into the handle of his broom and began to bleed.
"That will do!" shrieked Madam Hooch, zooming between them. "Penalty to Gryffindor for an unprovoked attack on their chaser. Penalty to Slytherin for deliberate damage to their chaser." "Come off it, miss!" howled Fred.
But Madam Hooch blew her whistle, and Alicia flew forward to take the penalty.
"Come on, Alicia!" yelled Lee into the silence that had descended on the crowd. "Yes! She's beaten the keeper 20-0 to Gryffindor!"
Harry turned the firebolt sharply to watch Flint, still bleeding freely, fly forwards to take the Slytherin penalty. Wood was hovering in front of the Gryffindor goalposts, his jaw clenched.
"Course, Wood's a superb keeper,"
Lee Jordan told the crowd as Flint waited for Madam Hooch's whistle.
"Superb! Very difficult to pass, very difficult indeed. Yes, I don't believe it! He's saved it!"
Relieved, Harry zoomed away, gazing around for the snitch, but still making sure he caught every word of Lee's commentary. It was essential that he hold Malfoy off the snitch until Gryffindor was more than 50 points up.
"Gryffindor in possession. No, Slytherin in possession. No, Gryffindor back in possession. And it's Katie Bell. Katie Bell for Gryffindor with the quaffle. She's streaking up the pitch. That was deliberate."
Montague, a Slytherin chaser, had swerved in front of Katie and instead of seizing the quaffle, had grabbed her head. Katie cartwheeled in the air, managed to stay on her broom, but dropped the quaffle. Madam Hooch's whistle rang out again as she soared over to Montague and began shouting at him. A minute later, Katie had put another penalty past the Slytherin keeper.
30-0! Take that, you dirty, cheating...
Jordan, if you can't commentate in an unbiased way...
I'm telling it like it is, Professor.
Harry felt a huge jolt of excitement. He had seen the snitch. It was shimmering at the foot of one of the Gryffindor goalposts. But he mustn't catch it yet. And if Malfoy saw it... Faking a look of sudden concentration, Harry pulled his firebolt round and sped off towards the Slytherin end. It worked. Malfoy went haring after him, clearly thinking Harry had seen the snitch there. Whoosh! One of the bludgers came streaking past Harry's right ear, hit by the gigantic Slytherin beater, Derek. Next moment, whoosh! The second bludger had grazed Harry's elbow. The other beater, Bowl, was closing in. Harry had a fleeting glimpse of Bowl and Derek zooming towards him, clubs raised. He turned the firebolt upwards at the last second, and Bowl and Derek collided with a sickening crunch. "Ha-ha!" yelled Lee Jordan, as the Slytherin beaters lurched away from each other, clutching their heads. "Too bad, boys. You'll need to get up earlier than that to beat a firebolt. And it's Gryffindor in possession again as Johnson takes the quaffle. Flint alongside her. Poke him in the eye, Angelina. It was a joke, Professor. It was a joke. Oh, no! Flint in possession. Flint flying towards the Gryffindor goalposts. Come on now, Wood. Save!" But Flint had scored. There was an eruption of cheers from the Slytherin end, and Lee swore so badly that Professor McGonagall tried to tug the magical megaphone away from him. "Sorry, Professor, sorry. Won't happen again." "So, Gryffindor in the lead, 30 points to 10, and Gryffindor in possession." It was turning into the dirtiest match Harry had ever played in. Enraged that Gryffindor had taken such an early lead, the Slytherins were rapidly resorting to any means to take the quaffle. Bowl hit Alicia with his club and tried to say he'd thought she was a bludger. George Weasley elbowed Bowl in the face in retaliation. Madam Hooch awarded both teams penalties, and Wood pulled off another spectacular save, making the score 40-10 to Gryffindor. The snitch had disappeared again. Malfoy was still keeping close to Harry as he soared over the match, looking around for it, once Gryffindor were 50 points ahead. Katie scored 50-10. Fred and George Weasley were swooping around her, clubs raised, in case any of the Slytherins were thinking of revenge. Bowl and Derek took advantage of Fred and George's absence to aim both bludgers at Wood. They caught him in the stomach, one after the other, and he rolled over in the air, clutching his broom, completely winded. Madam Hooch was beside herself. "You do not attack the keeper unless the quaffle is within the scoring area!" she shrieked at Bowl and Derek. "Gryffindor penalty!" And Angelina scored, 60-10. Moments later, Fred Weasley pelted a bludger at Warrington, knocking the quaffle out of his hands. Alicia seized it and put it through the Slytherin goal, 70-10. The Gryffindor crowd below were screaming themselves hoarse. Gryffindor was 60 points in the lead, and if Harry caught the snitch now, the cup was theirs. Harry could almost feel hundreds of eyes following him as he soared around the pitch, high above the rest of the game, with Malfoy speeding along behind him. And then he saw it. The snitch was sparkling 20 feet above him. Harry put on a huge burst of speed, the wind roaring in his ears. He stretched out his hand, but suddenly the firebolt was slowing down. Horrified, he looked around. Malfoy had thrown himself forward, grabbed hold of the firebolt's tail, and was pulling it back. Harry was angry enough to hit Malfoy, but he couldn't reach. Malfoy was panting with the effort of holding on to the firebolt, but his eyes were sparkling maliciously. He had achieved what he'd wanted. The snitch had disappeared again.
"Penalty! Penalty to Gryffindor! I've never seen such tactics!" Madam Hooch screeched, shooting up to where Malfoy was sliding back onto his Nimbus 2001. "You cheating scum!"
Lee Jordan was howling into the megaphone, dancing out of Professor McGonagall's reach.
"You filthy, cheating ba—"
Professor McGonagall didn't even bother to tell him off. She was actually shaking her fist in Malfoy's direction. Her hat had fallen off, and she too was shouting furiously. Alicia took Gryffindor's penalty, but she was so angry she missed by several feet. The Gryffindor team was losing concentration, and the Slytherins, delighted by Malfoy's foul on Harry, were being spurred on to greater heights.
Slytherin in possession. Slytherin heading for goal. Montague scores. Lee groaned. 70-20 to Gryffindor.
Harry was now marking Malfoy so closely their knees kept hitting each other. Harry wasn't going to let Malfoy anywhere near the snitch.
"Get out of it, Potter!" Malfoy yelled in frustration as he tried to turn and found Harry blocking him. "Angelina Johnson gets the quaffle for Gryffindor. Come on, Angelina, come on!"
Harry looked round. Every single Slytherin player, apart from Malfoy, even the Slytherin keeper, was streaking up the pitch towards Angelina. They were all going to block her. Harry wheeled the firebolt about, bent so low he was lying flat along the handle, and kicked it forwards. Like a bullet, he shot towards the Slytherins.
Ah!
They scattered as the firebolt zoomed towards them. Angelina's way was clear.
She scores! She scores! Gryffindor lead by 80 points to 20!
Harry, who had almost pelted headlong into the stands, skidded to a halt in mid-air, reversed and zoomed back into the middle of the pitch. And then he saw something to make his heart stand still. Malfoy was diving, a look of triumph on his face. There, a few feet above the grass below, was a tiny golden glimmer. Harry urged the firebolt downwards, but Malfoy was miles ahead.
"Go! Go! Go!"
Harry urged his broom. They were gaining on Malfoy. Harry flattened himself to the broom handle as Bowl sent a bludger at him. He was at Malfoy's ankles. He was level. Harry threw himself forwards, taking both hands off his broom. He knocked Malfoy's arm out of the way and... yes! He pulled out of his dive, his hand in the air, and the stadium exploded. Harry soared above the crowd, an odd ringing in his ears. The tiny golden ball was held tight in his fist, beating its wings hopelessly against his fingers. Then Wood was speeding towards him, half blinded by tears. He seized Harry around the neck and sobbed unrestrainedly into his shoulder. Harry felt two large thumps as Fred and George hit them. Then Angelina, Alicia and Katie's voices.
"We've won the cup! We've won the cup!"
Tangled together in a many-armed hug, the Gryffindor team sank, yelling hoarsely, back to earth. Wave upon wave of crimson supporters was pouring over the barriers onto the pitch. Hands were raining down on their backs. Harry had a confused impression of noise and bodies pressing in on him. Then he and the rest of the team were hoisted onto the shoulders of the crowd. Thrust into the light, he saw Hagrid, plastered with crimson rosettes.
"You beat 'em, Harry! You beat 'em! Wait till I tell Buckbeak!"
There was Percy, jumping up and down like a maniac, all dignity forgotten. Professor McGonagall was sobbing harder even than Wood, wiping her eyes with an enormous Gryffindor flag. And there, fighting their way towards Harry, were Ron and Hermione. Words failed them. They simply beamed as Harry was borne towards the stands where Dumbledore stood, waiting with the enormous Quidditch cup. If only there had been a Dementor around. As a sobbing Wood passed Harry the cup, as he lifted it into the air, Harry felt he could have produced the world's best Patronus. Chapter 16. Professor Trelawney's Prediction. Harry's euphoria at finally winning the Quidditch Cup lasted at least a week. Even the weather seemed to be celebrating. As June approached, the days became cloudless and sultry, and all anybody felt like doing was strolling into the grounds and flopping down on the grass with several pints of iced pumpkin juice, perhaps playing a casual game of gobstones, or watching the giant squid propel itself dreamily across the surface of the lake. But they couldn't. The exams were nearly upon them, and instead of lazing around outside, the students were forced to remain inside the castle, trying to bully their brains into concentrating, while enticing wafts of summer air drifted in through the windows. Even Fred and George Weasley had been spotted working. They were about to take their OWLs, ordinary wizarding levels. Percy was getting ready to sit his NEWTs, nastily exhausting wizarding tests, the highest qualification Hogwarts offered. As Percy hoped to enter the Ministry of Magic, he needed top grades. He was becoming increasingly edgy and gave very severe punishments to anybody who disturbed the quiet of the common room in the evenings. In fact, the only person who seemed more anxious than Percy was Hermione. Harry and Ron had given up asking her how she was managing to attend several classes at once, but they couldn't restrain themselves when they saw the exam timetable she had drawn up for herself. The first column read, Monday, 9 o'clock, Arithmancy. 9 o'clock, Transfiguration. Lunch. 1 o'clock, Charms. 1 o'clock, Ancient Runes. Hermione, Ron said cautiously, because she was liable to explode when interrupted these days, are you sure you've copied down these times right?
What? Snapped Hermione, picking up the exam timetable and examining it. Yes, of course I have.
Is there any point asking how you're going to sit two exams at once? Said Harry.
No, said Hermione shortly. Has either of you seen my copy of Numerology and Grammatica?
Oh, yeah, I borrowed it for a bit of bedtime reading, said Ron, but very quietly. Hermione started shifting heaps of parchment around on her table, looking for the book. Just then there was a rustle at the window, and Hedwig fluttered through it, a note clutched tightly in her beak.
It's from Hagrid, said Harry, ripping the note open. Buckbeak's appeal. It's set for the 6th.
That's the day we finish our exams, said Hermione, still looking everywhere for her arithmancy book.
And they're coming up here to do it, said Harry, still reading from the letter. Someone from the Ministry of Magic and an executioner.
Hermione looked up, startled.
They're bringing the executioner to the appeal, but that sounds as though they've already decided.
Yeah, it does, said Harry slowly.
They can't, Ron howled. I've spent ages reading up stuff for him. They can't just ignore it all.
But Harry had a horrible feeling that the Committee for the Disposal of Dangerous Creatures had had its mind made up for it by Mr. Malfoy. Draco, who had been noticeably subdued since Gryffindor's triumph in the Quidditch final, seemed to regain some of his old swagger over the next few days. From sneering comments Harry overheard, Malfoy was certain Buckbeak was going to be killed, and seemed thoroughly pleased with himself for bringing it about. It was all Harry could do to stop himself imitating Hermione and hitting Malfoy in the face on these occasions. And the worst thing of all was that they had no time or opportunity to go and see Hagrid, because the strict new security measures had not been lifted, and Harry didn't dare retrieve his invisibility cloak from below the one-eyed witch. Exam week began, and an unnatural hush fell over the castle. The third years emerged from transfiguration at lunchtime on Monday, limp and ashen-faced, comparing results and bemoaning the difficulty of the tasks they had been set, which had included turning a teapot into a tortoise. Hermione irritated the rest by fussing about how her tortoise had looked more like a turtle, which was the least of everyone else's worries.
Mine still had a spout for a tail. What a nightmare!
Were the tortoises supposed to breathe steam? It still had a willow-patterned shell. Do you think that'll count against me?
Then, after a hasty lunch, it was straight back upstairs for the charms exam. Hermione had been right. Professor Flitwick did indeed test them on cheering charms. Harry slightly overdid his out of nerves, and Ron, who was partnering him, ended up in fits of hysterical laughter and had to be led away to a quiet room for an hour before he was ready to perform the charm himself. After dinner, the students hurried back to their common rooms, not to relax, but to start revising for care of magical creatures, potions, and astronomy. Hagrid presided over the care of magical creatures exam the following morning with a very preoccupied air indeed. His heart didn't seem to be in it at all. He had provided a large tub of fresh flobberworms for the class, and told them that to pass the test their flobberworm had to still be alive at the end of 1 hour. As flobberworms flourished best, if left to their own devices, it was the easiest exam any of them had ever sat, and also gave Harry, Ron and Hermione plenty of opportunity to speak to Hagrid.
"Beaky's getting a bit depressed,"
Hagrid told them, bending low on the pretense of checking that Harry's flobberworm was still alive.
"Been cooped up too long. But still, we'll know day after tomorrow, one way or the other."
They had potions that afternoon, which was an unqualified disaster. Try as Harry might, he couldn't get his confusing concoction to thicken, and Snape, standing watching with an air of vindictive pleasure, scribbled something that looked suspiciously like a zero onto his notes before moving away. Then came astronomy at midnight, up on the tallest tower. History of magic on Wednesday morning, in which Harry scribbled everything Florian Fortescue had ever told him about medieval witch hunts, while wishing he could have had one of Fortescue's chocolate sundaes with him in the stifling classroom. Wednesday afternoon meant herbology in the greenhouses under a baking hot sun, then back to the common room once more, with the backs of their necks sunburnt, thinking longingly of this time next day when it would all be over. Their second-from-last exam, on Thursday morning, was Defence Against the Dark Arts. Professor Lupin had compiled the most unusual exam any of them had ever taken, a sort of obstacle course outside in the sun, where they had to wade across a deep paddling pool containing a grindylow, cross a series of potholes full of redcaps, squish their way across a patch of marsh, ignoring the misleading directions from a hinky-punk, then climb into an old trunk, and battle with a new boggart. "Excellent, Harry," Lupin muttered, as Harry climbed out of the trunk, grinning. "Full marks." Flushed with his success, Harry hung around to watch Ron and Hermione. Ron did very well until he reached the hinky-punk, which successfully confused him into sinking waist-high into the quagmire. Hermione did everything perfectly until she reached the trunk with the boggart in it. After about a minute inside it, she burst out again, screaming.
"Hermione," said Lupin, startled.
"What's the matter?"
"Professor McGonagall," Hermione gasped, pointing into the trunk. "She said I'd failed everything."
It took a little while to calm Hermione down. When at last she had regained a grip on herself, she, Harry and Ron went back to the castle. Ron was still slightly inclined to laugh at Hermione's boggart, but an argument was averted by the sight that met them on the top of the steps. Cornelius Fudge, sweating slightly in his pin-striped cloak, was standing there staring out at the grounds. He started at the sight of Harry.
"Hello there, Harry," he said. "Just had an exam, I expect. Nearly finished?"
"Yes," said Harry. Hermione and Ron, not being on speaking terms with the Minister for Magic, hovered awkwardly in the background.
"Lovely day,"
said Fudge, casting an eye over the lake.
"Pity, pity."
He sighed deeply and looked down at Harry.
"I'm here on an unpleasant mission, Harry. The Committee for the Disposal of Dangerous Creatures required a witness to the execution of a mad hippogriff, as I needed to visit Hogwarts to check on the black situation, I was asked to step in."
"Does that mean the appeal's already happened?" Ron interrupted, stepping forwards.
"No, no, it's scheduled for this afternoon,"
said Fudge, looking curiously at Ron.
"Then you might not have to witness an execution at all," said Ron stoutly. "The hippogriff might get off."
Before Fudge could answer, two wizards came through the castle doors behind him. One was so ancient he appeared to be withering before their very eyes. The other was tall and strapping with a thin black moustache. Harry gathered that they were representatives of the Committee for the Disposal of Dangerous Creatures, because the very old wizard squinted towards Hagrid's cabin and said in a feeble voice,
"Dear, dear, I'm getting too old for this. 2 o'clock, isn't it, Fudge?"
The black moustached man was fingering something in his belt. Harry looked and saw that he was running one broad thumb along the blade of a shining axe. Ron opened his mouth to say something, but Hermione nudged him hard in the ribs and jerked her head towards the entrance hall.
"Why'd you stop me?" said Ron angrily as they entered the great hall for lunch. "Did you see them? They've even got the axe ready. This isn't justice!"
"Ron, your dad works for the Ministry. You can't go saying things like that to his boss," said Hermione. But she, too, looked very upset. "As long as Hagrid keeps his head this time and argues his case properly, they can't possibly execute Buckbeak."
But Harry could tell Hermione didn't really believe what she was saying. All around them, people were talking excitedly as they ate their lunch, happily anticipating the end of exams that afternoon. But Harry, Ron and Hermione, lost in worry about Hagrid and Buckbeak, didn't join in. Harry and Ron's last exam was divination, Hermione's Muggle studies. They walked up the marble staircase together. Hermione left them on the first floor, and Harry and Ron proceeded all the way up to the seventh, where many of their class were sitting on the spiral staircase to Professor Trelawney's classroom, trying to cram in a bit of last-minute revision.
"She's seeing us all separately,"
Neville informed them as they went to sit down next to him. He had his copy of Unfogging the Future open on his lap at the pages devoted to crystal gazing.
"Have either of you ever seen anything in a crystal ball?"
he asked them unhappily.
"Nope,"
said Ron in an offhand voice. He kept checking his watch. Harry knew that he was counting down the time until Buckbeak's appeal started. The queue of people outside the classroom shortened very slowly. As each person climbed back down the silver ladder, the rest of the class hissed,
"What did she ask? Was it okay?"
But they all refused to say.
"She says the crystal balls told her that if I tell you, I'll have a horrible accident,"
squeaked Neville as he clambered back down the ladder towards Harry and Ron, who had now reached the landing.
"That's convenient," snorted Ron. "You know, I'm starting to think Hermione was right about her."
He jabbed his thumb towards the trapdoor overhead. "She's a right old fraud."
"Yeah," said Harry, looking at his own watch. It was now 2 o'clock. "Wish she'd hurry up."
Parvati came back down the ladder, glowing with pride.
"She says I've got all the makings of a true seer," she informed Harry and Ron. "I saw loads of stuff. Well, good luck."
She hurried off down the spiral staircase towards Lavender.
"Ronald Weasley," said the familiar, misty voice from over their heads.
Ron grimaced at Harry and climbed the silver ladder out of sight. Harry was now the only person left to be tested. He settled himself on the floor with his back against the wall, listening to a fly buzzing in the sunny window, his mind across the grounds with Hagrid. Finally, after about 20 minutes, Ron's large feet reappeared on the ladder.
"How'd it go?" Harry asked him, standing up.
"Rubbish," said Ron. "Couldn't see a thing, so I made some stuff up. Don't think she was convinced, though."
"Meet you in the common room," Harry muttered as Professor Trelawney's voice called.
"Harry Potter!"
The tower room was hotter than ever before. The curtains were closed, the fire was alight, and the usual sickly scent made Harry cough as he stumbled through the clutter of chairs and tables to where Professor Trelawney sat waiting for him before a large crystal ball.
"Good day, my dear," she said softly. "If you would kindly gaze into the orb. Take your time now, then tell me what you see within it."
Harry bent over the crystal ball and stared as hard as he could, willing it to show him something other than swirling white fog. But nothing happened.
"Well," Professor Trelawney prompted delicately, "what do you see?"
The heat was overpowering, and his nostrils were stinging with the perfumed smoke wafting from the fire beside them. He thought of what Ron had just said, and decided to pretend.
Said Harry, a dark shape. What does it resemble? Whispered Professor Trelawney.
Think now.
Harry cast his mind around, and it landed on Buckbeak.
A hippogriff, he said firmly.
"Indeed," whispered Professor Trelawney, scribbling keenly on the parchment perched upon her knees. "My boy, you may well be seeing the outcome of poor Hagrid's trouble with the Ministry of Magic. Look closer. Does the hippogriff appear to have its head?"
"Yes," said Harry firmly.
"Are you sure?" Professor Trelawney urged him. "Are you quite sure, dear? You don't see it writhing on the ground, perhaps, and a shadowy figure raising an axe behind it?" No, said Harry, starting to feel slightly sick.
No blood? No weeping, Hagrid?
No, said Harry again, wanting more than ever to leave the room and the heat. It looks fine. It's flying away. Professor Trelawney sighed.
Well, dear, I think we'll leave it there. A little disappointing, but I'm sure you did your best.
Relieved, Harry got up, picked up his bag and turned to go. But then a loud, harsh voice spoke behind him.
It will happen tonight.
Harry wheeled around. Professor Trelawney had gone rigid in her armchair. Her eyes were unfocused and her mouth sagging.
Sorry, said Harry.
But Professor Trelawney didn't seem to hear him. Her eyes started to roll. Harry stood there in a panic. She looked as though she was about to have some sort of seizure. He hesitated, thinking of running to the hospital wing. And then Professor Trelawney spoke again, in the same harsh voice, quite unlike her own.
The Dark Lord lies alone and friendless, abandoned by his followers. His servant has been chained these 12 years. Tonight, before midnight, the servant will break free and set out to rejoin his master. The Dark Lord will rise again with his servant's aid, greater and more terrible than ever before. Tonight, before midnight, the servant will set out to rejoin his master.
Professor Trelawney's head fell forwards onto her chest. She made a grunting sort of noise. Then, quite suddenly, her head snapped up again.
"I'm so sorry, dear boy," she said dreamily. "The heat of the day, you know. I drifted off for a moment."
Harry stood there, still staring.
"Is there anything wrong, my dear?"
"You just told me that the Dark Lord's going to rise again, that his servant's going to go back to him." Professor Trelawney looked thoroughly startled.
"The Dark Lord? He who must not be named? My dear boy, that's hardly something to joke about. Rise again, indeed. But you just said it. You said the Dark Lord. I think you must have dozed off too, dear," said Professor Trelawney. "I would certainly not presume to predict anything quite as far-fetched as that."
Harry climbed back down the ladder and the spiral staircase, wondering. Had he just heard Professor Trelawney make a real prediction? Or had that been her idea of an impressive end to the test? 5 minutes later, he was dashing past the security trolls outside the entrance to Gryffindor Tower, Professor Trelawney's words still resounding in his head. People were striding past him in the opposite direction, laughing and joking, heading for the grounds and a bit of long-awaited freedom. By the time he had reached the portrait hole and entered the common room, it was almost deserted. Over in a corner, however, sat Ron and Hermione.
"Professor Trelawney," Harry panted, "just told me—"
But he stopped abruptly at the sight of their faces.
"Buckbeak lost," said Ron weakly. "Hagrid's just sent this." Hagrid's note was dry this time. No tears had splattered it, yet his hand seemed to have shaken so much as he wrote that it was hardly legible.
"Lost appeal. They're going to execute at sunset. Nothing you can do. Don't come down. I don't want you to see it. Hagrid."
"We've got to go," said Harry at once. "He can't just sit there on his own waiting for the executioner."
"Sunset, though," said Ron, who was staring out of the window in a glazed sort of way. "We'd never be allowed, especially you, Harry."
Harry sank his head into his hands, thinking.
"If we only had the invisibility cloak." "Where is it?" said Hermione.
Harry told her about leaving it in the passageway under the one-eyed witch.
"If Snape sees me anywhere near there again, I'm in serious trouble," he finished.
"That's true," said Hermione, getting to her feet. "If he sees you. How do you open the witch's hump again?"
You tap it and say Descendium," said Harry. "But—" Hermione didn't wait for the rest of his sentence. She strode across the room, pushed the fat lady's portrait open, and vanished from sight.
"She hasn't gone to get it," Ron said, staring after her. She had. Hermione returned a quarter of an hour later with a silvery cloak folded carefully under her robes.
"Hermione, I don't know what's got into you lately," said Ron, astounded.
First you hit Malfoy, then you walk out on Professor Trelawney. Hermione looked rather flattered. They went down to dinner with everybody else, but did not return to Gryffindor Tower afterwards. Harry had the cloak hidden down the front of his robes. He had to keep his arms folded to hide the lump. They skulked in an empty chamber off the entrance hall, listening until they were sure it was deserted. They heard a last pair of people hurrying across the hall and a door slamming. Hermione poked her head around the door.
"Okay," she whispered. "No one there. Cloak on."
Walking very close together so that nobody would see them, they crossed the hall on tiptoe beneath the cloak, then walked down the stone front steps into the grounds. The sun was already sinking behind the Forbidden Forest, gilding the top branches of the trees. They reached Hagrid's cabin and knocked. He was a minute in answering, and when he did, he looked all around for his visitor, pale-faced and trembling.
"It's us," Harry hissed. "We're wearing the invisibility cloak. Let us in and we can take it off."
"You shouldn't have come,"
Hagrid whispered. But he stood back and they stepped inside. Hagrid shut the door quickly and Harry pulled off the cloak. Hagrid was not crying, nor did he throw himself upon their necks. He looked like a man who did not know where he was or what to do. This helplessness was worse to watch than tears.
"Want some tea?"
he said. His great hands were shaking as he reached for the kettle.
"Where's Buckbeak, Hagrid?" said Hermione hesitantly.
I took him outside,"
said Hagrid, spilling milk all over the table as he filled up the jug.
"He's tethered in me pumpkin patch. Thought he ought to see the trees and smell fresh air, and before—"
Hagrid's hand trembled so violently that the milk jug slipped from his grasp and shattered all over the floor.
"I'll do it, Hagrid,"
said Hermione quickly, hurrying over and starting to clean up the mess.
"There's another one in the cupboard,"
Hagrid said, sitting down and wiping his forehead on his sleeve. Harry glanced at Ron, who looked back hopelessly.
"Isn't there anything anyone can do, Hagrid?"
Harry asked fiercely, sitting down next to him.
"Dumbledore?"
"He's tried," said Hagrid. "He's got no power to overrule the committee. He told them Buckbeak's all right, but they're scared. You know what Lucius Malfoy's like. Threatened him, I expect, and the executioner, McNair. He's an old pal of Malfoy's. But it'll be quick and clean, and I'll be beside him."
Hagrid swallowed. His eyes were darting all over the cabin, as though looking for some shred of hope or comfort.
"Dumbledore's going to come down while it happens. Wrote me this morning. Said he wants to be with me. Great man, Dumbledore."
Hermione, who had been rummaging in Hagrid's cupboard for another milk jug, let out a small, quickly stifled sob. She straightened up with the new jug in her hands, fighting back tears.
"We'll stay with you too, Hagrid,"
she began, but Hagrid shook his shaggy head.
"You're to go back up to the castle, I told you. I don't want you watching. And you shouldn't be down here anyway. If Fudge and Dumbledore catch you out without permission, Harry, you'll be in big trouble."
Silent tears were now streaming down Hermione's face, but she hid them from Hagrid, bustling around making tea. Then, as she picked up the milk bottle to pour some into the jug, she let out a shriek.
"Ron! I don't believe it! It's Scabbers!"
Ron gaped at her.
"What are you talking about?"
Hermione carried the milk jug over to the table and turned it upside down. With a frantic squeak and much scrambling to get back inside, Scabbers the rat came sliding out onto the table.
"Scabbers," said Ron blankly. "Scabbers, what are you doing here?"
He grabbed the struggling rat and held him up to the light. Scabbers looked dreadful. He was thinner than ever. Large tufts of hair had fallen out, leaving wide bald patches, and he writhed in Ron's hands as though desperate to free himself.
"It's okay, Scabbers," said Ron. "No cats. There's nothing here to hurt you."
Hagrid suddenly stood up, his eyes fixed on the window. His normally ruddy face had gone the colour of parchment.
"They're coming."
Harry, Ron and Hermione whipped around. A group of men was walking down the distant castle steps. In front was Albus Dumbledore, his silver beard gleaming in the dying sun. Next to him trotted Cornelius Fudge. Behind them came the feeble old committee member and the executioner, McNair.
"You've got to go," said Hagrid. Every inch of him was trembling. "They mustn't find you here. Go on now."
Ron stuffed Scabbers into his pocket, and Hermione picked up the cloak.
"I'll let you out the back way," said Hagrid.
They followed him to the door into his back garden. Harry felt strangely unreal, and even more so when he saw Buckbeak a few yards away, tethered to a tree behind Hagrid's pumpkin patch. Buckbeak seemed to know something was happening. He turned his sharp head from side to side and pawed the ground nervously.
"It's okay, Beaky," said Hagrid softly. "It's okay."
He turned to Harry, Ron and Hermione.
"Go on," he said. "Get going."
But they didn't move.
"Hagrid, we can't. We'll tell them what really happened. They can't kill him."
"Go," said Hagrid fiercely. "It's bad enough without you lot in trouble and all."
They had no choice. As Hermione threw the cloak over Harry and Ron, they heard voices at the front of the cabin. Hagrid looked at the place where they had just vanished from sight.
"Go quick," he said hoarsely. "Don't listen."
And he strode back into his cabin as someone knocked at the front door. Slowly, in a kind of horrified trance, Harry, Ron, and Hermione set off silently around Hagrid's house. As they reached the other side, the front door closed with a sharp snap.
"Please, let's hurry," Hermione whispered. "I can't stand it. I can't bear it."
They started up the sloping lawn towards the castle. The sun was sinking fast now. The sky had turned to a clear, purple-tinged grey, but to the west there was a ruby-red glow. Ron stopped dead.
"Oh, please, Ron," Hermione began.
"It's Scabbers. He won't stay put."
Ron was bent over, trying to keep Scabbers in his pocket, but the rat was going berserk, squeaking madly, twisting and flailing, trying to sink his teeth into Ron's hand.
"Scabbers, it's me, you idiot. It's Ron," Ron hissed.
They heard a door open behind them and men's voices.
"Oh, Ron, please let's move. They're going to do it,"
Hermione breathed.
"Okay, Scabbers, stay put."
They walked forwards. Harry, like Hermione, was trying not to listen to the rumble of voices behind them. Ron stopped again.
"I can't hold him. Scabbers, shut up. Everyone will hear us."
The rat was squealing wildly, but not loudly enough to cover up the sounds drifting from Hagrid's garden. There was a jumble of indistinct male voices, a silence, and then, without warning, the unmistakable swish and thud of an axe. Hermione swayed on the spot.
"They did it," she whispered to Harry. I don't believe it. They did it."
Chapter 17 Cat, Rat and Dog. Harry's mind had gone blank with shock. The three of them stood transfixed with horror under the invisibility cloak. The very last rays of the setting sun were casting a bloody light over the long shadowed grounds. Then behind them they heard a wild howling. "Hagrid," Harry muttered. Without thinking about what he was doing, he made to turn back, but both Ron and Hermione seized his arms.
"We can't," said Ron, who was paper white. "He'll be in worse trouble if they know we've been to see him."
Hermione's breathing was shallow and uneven.
"How could they?" she choked. "How could they?"
"Come on," said Ron, whose teeth seemed to be chattering. They set off back towards the castle, walking slowly to keep themselves hidden under the cloak. Light was fading fast now. By the time they reached open ground, darkness was settling like a spell around them.
"Scabbers, keep still!" Ron hissed, clamping his hand over his chest.
The rat was wriggling madly. Ron came to a sudden halt, trying to force Scabbers deeper into his pocket.
"What's the matter with you, you stupid rat? Stay still. Ouch! He bit me." "Ron, be quiet," Hermione whispered urgently. "Fudge'll be out here in a minute. He won't stay put."
Scabbers was plainly terrified. He was writhing with all his might, trying to break free of Ron's grip.
"What's the matter with him?"
But Harry had just seen, slinking towards them, his body low to the ground, wide yellow eyes glinting eerily in the darkness, Crookshanks. Whether he could see them, or was following the sound of Scabbers's squeaks, Harry couldn't tell.
"Crookshanks!"
Hermione moaned.
"No, go away, Crookshanks! Go away!"
But the cat was getting nearer.
"Scabbers! No!"
Too late. The rat had slipped between Ron's clutching fingers, hit the ground, and scampered away. In one bound, Crookshanks sprang after him, and before Harry or Hermione could stop him, Ron had thrown the invisibility cloak off himself and pelted away into the darkness.
"Ron!"
Hermione moaned. She and Harry looked at each other, then followed at a sprint. It was impossible to run full out under the cloak. They pulled it off, and it streamed behind them like a banner as they hurtled after Ron. They could hear his feet thundering along ahead and his shouts at Crookshanks.
"Get away from him! Get away! Scabbers, come here!"
There was a loud thud.
"Gotcha! Get off, you stinking cat!"
Harry and Hermione almost fell over Ron. They skidded to a stop right in front of him. He was sprawled on the ground, but Scabbers was back in his pocket. He had both hands held tight over the quivering lump.
"Ron, come on, back under the cloak," Hermione panted. "Dumbledore, the minister, they'll be coming back out in a minute."
But before they could cover themselves again, before they could even catch their breath, they heard the soft pounding of gigantic paws. Something was bounding towards them out of the dark. An enormous, pale-eyed, jet-black dog. Harry reached for his wand, but too late. The dog had made an enormous leap, and its front paws hit him on the chest. He keeled over backwards in a whirl of hair. He felt its hot breath, saw inch-long teeth. But the force of its leap had carried it too far. It rolled off him. Dazed, feeling as though his ribs were broken, Harry tried to stand up. He could hear it growling as it skidded around for a new attack. Ron was on his feet. As the dog sprang back towards them, he pushed Harry aside. The dog's jaws fastened instead around Ron's outstretched arm. Harry lunged at it and seized a handful of the brute's hair, but it was dragging Ron away as easily as if he were a rag doll. Then, out of nowhere, something hit Harry so hard across the face he was knocked off his feet again. He heard Hermione shriek with pain and fall too. Harry groped for his wand, blinking blood out of his eyes.
"Lumos," he whispered.
The wand light showed him the trunk of a thick tree. They had chased Scabbers into the shadow of the Whomping Willow, and its branches were creaking as though in a high wind, whipping backwards and forwards to stop them going nearer. And there, at the base of the trunk, was the dog, dragging Ron backwards into a large gap in the roots. Ron was fighting furiously, but his head and torso were slipping out of sight.
"Ron!"
Harry shouted, trying to follow, but a heavy branch whipped lethally through the air, and he was forced backwards again. All they could see now was one of Ron's legs, which he had hooked around a root in an effort to stop the dog pulling him further underground. Then a horrible crack cut the air like a gunshot. Ron's leg had broken, and next second his foot had vanished from sight.
"Harry, we've got to go for help!"
Hermione cried. She was bleeding too. The willow had cut her across the shoulder.
"No, that thing's big enough to eat him. We haven't got time.
We're never going to get through without help."
Another branch whipped down at them, twigs clenched like knuckles.
"If that dog can get in, we can,"
Harry panted, darting here and there, trying to find a way through the vicious, swishing branches. But he couldn't get an inch nearer to the tree roots without being in range of the tree's blows.
"Oh, help! Help!"
Hermione whispered frantically, dancing uncertainly on the spot.
"Please!"
Crookshanks darted forwards. He slithered between the battering branches like a snake and placed his front paws upon a knot on the trunk. Abruptly, as though the tree had been turned to marble, it stopped moving. Not a leaf twitched or shook.
"Crookshanks!"
Hermione whispered uncertainly. She now grasped Harry's arm painfully hard.
"How did he know?"
"'He's friends with that dog,' said Harry grimly. "'I've seen them together. Come on, and keep your wand out.' They covered the distance to the trunk in seconds, but before they had reached the gap in the roots, Crookshanks had slid into it with a flick of his bottle-brush tail. Harry went next. He crawled forwards, head first, and slid down an earthy slope to the bottom of a very low tunnel. Crookshanks was a little way along, his eyes flashing in the light from Harry's wand. Seconds later, Hermione slithered down beside him.
"'Where's Ron?'
she whispered in a terrified voice.
"'This way,' said Harry, setting off, bent-backed, after Crookshanks.
"'Where does this tunnel come out?'
Hermione asked breathlessly from behind him. "'I don't know. It's marked on the Marauder's map, but Fred and George said no one's ever got into it. It goes off the edge of the map, but it looked like it ends up in Hogsmeade.'
They moved as fast as they could, bent almost double. Ahead of them, Crookshanks's tail bobbed in and out of view. On and on went the passage. It felt at least as long as the one to Honeydukes. All Harry could think of was Ron and what the enormous dog might be doing to him. He was drawing breath in sharp, painful gasps, running at a crouch. And then the tunnel began to rise. Moments later, it twisted and Crookshanks had gone. Instead, Harry could see a patch of dim light through a small opening. He and Hermione paused, gasping for breath, edging forwards. Both raised their wands to see what lay beyond. It was a room, a very disordered, dusty room. Paper was peeling from the walls. There were stains all over the floor. Every piece of furniture was broken, as though somebody had smashed it. The windows were all boarded up. Harry glanced at Hermione, who looked very frightened, but nodded. Harry pulled himself out of the hole, staring around. The room was deserted, but a door to their right stood open, leading to a shadowy hallway. Hermione suddenly grabbed Harry's arm again. Her wide eyes were travelling around the boarded windows.
"Harry," she whispered, "I think we're in the Shrieking Shack."
Harry looked around. His eyes fell on a wooden chair near them. Large chunks had been torn out of it. One of the legs had been ripped off entirely.
"Ghosts didn't do that," he said slowly.
At that moment there was a creak overhead. Something had moved upstairs. Both of them looked up at the ceiling. Hermione's grip on Harry's arm was so tight he was losing feeling in his fingers. He raised his eyebrows at her. She nodded again and let go. Quietly as they could, they crept out into the hall and up the crumbling staircase. Everything was covered in a thick layer of dust, except the floor, where a wide, shiny stripe had been made by something being dragged upstairs. They reached the dark landing.
"Knox!"
they whispered together, and the lights at the end of their wands went out. Only one door was open. As they crept towards it, they heard movement from behind it, a low moan, and then a deep, loud purring. They exchanged a last look, a last nod. Wand held tightly before him, Harry kicked the door wide open. On a magnificent four-poster bed with dusty hangings lay Crookshanks, purring loudly at the sight of them. On the floor beside him, clutching his leg, which stuck out at a strange angle, was Ron. Harry and Hermione dashed across to him.
"Ron, are you okay? Where's the dog?"
"Not a dog," Ron moaned. His teeth were gritted with pain. "Harry, it's a trap."
"What?"
"He's the dog. He's an animagus." Ron was staring over Harry's shoulder. Harry wheeled around. With a snap, the man in the shadows closed the door behind them. A mass of filthy, matted hair hung to his elbows. If eyes hadn't been shining out of the deep, dark sockets, he might have been a corpse. The waxy skin was stretched so tightly over the bones of his face, it looked like a skull. His yellow teeth were bared in a grin. It was Sirius Black.
"Expelliarmus," he croaked, pointing Ron's wand at them.
Harry and Hermione's wands shot out of their hands, high in the air, and Black caught them.
Then he took a step closer. His eyes were fixed on Harry.
"I thought you'd come and help your friend," he said hoarsely.
His voice sounded as though he had long ago lost the habit of using it.
"Your father would have done the same for me. Brave of you not to run for a teacher. I'm grateful. It will make everything much easier."
The taunt about his father rang in Harry's ears as though Black had bellowed it. A boiling hate erupted in Harry's chest, leaving no place for fear. For the first time in his life, he wanted his wand back in his hand, not to defend himself, but to attack, to kill. Without knowing what he was doing, he started forwards. But there was a sudden movement on either side of him, and two pairs of hands grabbed him and held him back.
"No, Harry," Hermione gasped in a petrified whisper.
Ron, however, spoke to Black.
"If you want to kill Harry, you'll have to kill us too," he said fiercely,
though the effort of standing up had drained him of still more colour, and he swayed slightly as he spoke. Something flickered in Black's shadowed eyes.
"Lie down," he said quietly to Ron. "You will damage that leg even more."
"Did you hear me?"
Ron said weakly, though he was clinging painfully to Harry to stay upright.
"You'll have to kill all three of us."
"There'll only be one murder here tonight," said Black, and his grin widened.
"Why's that?"
Harry spat, trying to wrench himself free of Ron and Hermione.
"Didn't care last time, did you? Didn't mind slaughtering all those muggles to get at Pettigrew? What's the matter? Gone soft in Azkaban?"
"Harry,"
Hermione whimpered,
"be quiet. He killed my mum and dad!"
Harry roared, and with a huge effort he broke free of Hermione and Ron's restraint and lunged forwards. He had forgotten about magic. He had forgotten that he was short and skinny and 13, whereas Black was a tall, full-grown man. All Harry knew was that he wanted to hurt Black as badly as he could, and that he didn't care how much he got hurt in return. Perhaps it was the shock of Harry doing something so stupid, but Black didn't raise the wands in time. One of Harry's hands fastened over Black's wasted wrist, forcing the wand tips away. The knuckles of Harry's other hand collided with the side of Black's head, and they fell backwards into the wall. Hermione was screaming. Ron was yelling. There was a blinding flash as the wands in Black's hand sent into the air a jet of sparks which missed Harry's face by inches. Harry felt the shrunken arm under his fingers twisting madly, but he clung on, his other hand punching every part of Black it could find. But Black's free hand had found Harry's throat.
"No," he hissed. "I've waited too long."
The fingers tightened. Harry choked, his glasses askew. Then he saw Hermione's foot swing out of nowhere. Black let go of Harry with a grunt of pain. Ron had thrown himself on Black's wand hand, and Harry heard a faint clatter. He fought free of the tangle of bodies and saw his own wand rolling across the floor. He threw himself towards it, but...
ah!
Crookshanks had joined the fray. Both sets of front claws had sunk themselves deep into Harry's arm. Harry threw him off, but Crookshanks now darted towards Harry's wand.
"No, you don't!"
roared Harry, and he aimed a kick at Crookshanks that made the cat leap aside, spitting. Harry snatched up his wand and turned.
"Get out of the way!"
he shouted at Ron and Hermione. They didn't need telling twice. Hermione, gasping for breath, her lip bleeding, scrambled aside, snatching up her and Ron's wands. Ron crawled to the four-poster and collapsed onto it, panting, his white face now tinged with green, both hands clutching his broken leg. Black was sprawled at the bottom of the wall. His thin chest rose and fell rapidly as he watched Harry walking slowly nearer, his wand pointing straight at Black's heart.
"Going to kill me, Harry?" he whispered.
Harry stopped right above him, his wand still pointing at Black's chest, looking down at him. A livid bruise was rising around Black's left eye, and his nose was bleeding. "You killed my parents," said Harry, his voice shaking slightly, but his wand hand quite steady. Black stared up at him out of those sunken eyes.
"I don't deny it," he said very quietly. "But if you knew the whole story..."
"The whole story?" Harry repeated, a furious pounding in his ears. "You sold them to Voldemort. That's all I need to know."
"You've got to listen to me," Black said,
and there was a note of urgency in his voice now.
"You'll regret it if you don't. You don't understand."
"I understand a lot better than you think," said Harry, and his voice shook more than ever. "You never heard her, did you? My mum, trying to stop Voldemort killing me. And you did that! You did it!" Before either of them could say another word, something ginger streaked past Harry. Crookshanks leapt onto Black's chest and settled himself there, right over Black's heart. Black blinked and looked down at the cat.
"Get off," he murmured,
trying to push Crookshanks off him. But Crookshanks sank his claws into Black's robes and wouldn't shift. He turned his ugly, squashed face to Harry and looked up at him with those great yellow eyes. To his right, Hermione gave a dry sob. Harry stared down at Black and Crookshanks, his grip tightening on the wand. So what if he had to kill the cat, too? It was in league with Black. If it was prepared to die, trying to protect Black, that wasn't Harry's business. If Black wanted to save it, that only proved he cared more for Crookshanks than Harry's parents. Harry raised the wand. Now was the moment to do it. Now was the moment to avenge his mother and father. He was going to kill Black. He had to kill Black. This was his chance. The seconds lengthened, and still Harry stood frozen there, wand poised, Black staring up at him, Crookshanks on his chest. Ron's ragged breathing came from near the bed. Hermione was quite silent. And then came a new sound. Muffled footsteps were echoing up through the floor. Someone was moving downstairs.
"We're up here!" Hermione screamed suddenly. "We're up here! Sirius Black! Quick!"
Black made a startled movement that almost dislodged Crookshanks. Harry gripped his wand convulsively.
"Do it now," said a voice in his head.
But the footsteps were thundering up the stairs, and Harry still hadn't done it. The door of the room burst open in a shower of red sparks, and Harry wheeled around as Professor Lupin came hurtling into the room, his face bloodless, his wand raised and ready. His eyes flickered over Ron, lying on the floor, over Hermione, cowering next to the door, to Harry, standing there with his wand covering Black, and then to Black himself, crumpled and bleeding at Harry's feet.
"Expelliarmus!" Lupin shouted.
Harry's wand flew once more out of his hand. So did the two Hermione was holding. Lupin caught them all deftly, then moved into the room, staring at Black, who still had Crookshanks lying protectively across his chest. Harry stood there, feeling suddenly empty. He hadn't done it. His nerve had failed him. Black was going to be handed back to the Dementors. Then Lupin spoke, in an odd voice, a voice that shook with some suppressed emotion.
"Where is he, Sirius?"
Harry looked quickly at Lupin. He didn't understand what Lupin meant. Who was Lupin talking about? He turned to look at Black again. Black's face was quite expressionless. For a few seconds he didn't move at all. Then, very slowly, he raised his empty hand and pointed straight at Ron. Mystified, Harry glanced around at Ron, who looked bewildered.
"But then,"
Lupin muttered, staring at Black so intently it seemed he was trying to read his mind, "why hasn't he shown himself before now? Unless..." Lupin's eyes suddenly widened, as though he was seeing something beyond Black, something none of the rest could see. "Unless he was the one. Unless you switched, without telling me." very slowly, his sunken gaze never leaving Lupin's face, Black nodded.
"Professor Lupin," Harry interrupted loudly, "what's going—"
But he never finished the question, because what he saw made his voice die in his throat. Lupin was lowering his wand. Next moment he had walked to Black's side, seized his hand, pulled him to his feet so that Crookshanks fell to the floor, and embraced Black like a brother. Harry felt as though the bottom had dropped out of his stomach.
"I don't believe it!"
Hermione screamed. Lupin let go of Black and turned to her. She had raised herself off the floor and was pointing at Lupin, wild-eyed.
"You! You!"
"Hermione!"
"You and him!"
"Hermione, calm down!"
"I didn't tell anyone!" Hermione shrieked. "I've been covering up for you!"
"Hermione, listen to me, please!" Lupin shouted. "I can explain!" Harry could feel himself shaking, not with fear, but with a fresh wave of fury.
"I trusted you," he shouted at Lupin, his voice wavering out of control, "and all the time you've been his friend."
"You're wrong," said Lupin. "I haven't been Sirius's friend for 12 years, but I am now. Let me explain."
"No!" Hermione screamed. "Harry, don't trust him. He's been helping Black get into the castle. He wants you dead too. He's a werewolf!"
There was a ringing silence. Everyone's eyes were now on Lupin, who looked remarkably calm, though rather pale. "Not at all up to your usual standard, Hermione," he said. "Only 1 out of 3, I'm afraid. I have not been helping Sirius get into the castle, and I certainly don't want Harry dead." An odd shiver passed over his face. "But I won't deny that I am a werewolf." Ron made a valiant effort to get up again, but fell back with a whimper of pain. Lupin made towards him, looking concerned, but Ron gasped,
"Get away from me, werewolf!"
Lupin stopped dead. Then, with an obvious effort, he turned to Hermione and said, "How long have you known?"
"Ages,"
Hermione whispered,
"since I did Professor Snape's essay."
"He'll be delighted," said Lupin coolly. "He set that essay hoping someone would realize what my symptoms meant. Did you check the lunar chart and realize that I was always ill at the full moon? Or did you realize that the boggart changed into the moon when it saw me?"
"Both,"
Hermione said quietly. Lupin forced a laugh.
"You're the cleverest witch of your age I've ever met, Hermione."
"I'm not," Hermione whispered. "If I'd been a bit cleverer, I'd have told everyone what you are."
"But they already know," said Lupin. "At least the staff do."
"Dumbledore hired you when he knew you were a werewolf," Ron gasped. "Is he mad?"
"Some of the staff thought so," said Lupin. "He had to work very hard to convince certain teachers that I'm trustworthy."
"And he was wrong," Harry yelled. "You've been helping him all the time." He was pointing at Black, who had crossed to the four-poster bed and sunk onto it, his face hidden in one shaking hand. Crookshanks leapt up beside him and stepped onto his lap, purring. Ron edged away from both of them, dragging his leg.
"I have not been helping Sirius," said Lupin. "If you'll give me a chance, I'll explain. Look."
He separated Harry, Ron, and Hermione's wands and threw each back to its owner. Harry caught his, stunned.
"There," said Lupin, sticking his own wand back into his belt. "You're armed, we're not. Now will you listen?"